Hello, this is Joshua Mack and A Few Minutes with the Puritan. We are reading through Jeremiah Burroughs' book on earthly mindedness, and we're getting to the good part. How to overcome earthly mindedness, or how to fight this sin and kill it. We want to talk, obviously, about being heavenly minded. That's the good stuff. But we can't really be heavenly minded until we stop being earthly minded. And so the question that he's asking in this chapter is, how do we kill this sin? He talks like it's a disease, and he says, what is the cure? The main thing we've tried to do thus far is to take the minds of men and women off of the things of the earth. This will prepare us for the next point, which is of infinite concern, our conversations in heaven. But because a man's conversation cannot be in heaven until his mind is taken off the earth, until the disease of earthly mindedness is cured, we must now propound those things that may help take off men's minds from the earth. He's going to give 11 helps to stop being earthly minded, and we'll just get through a couple today. But he starts here. Consider this. So he wants to give us reasons. He's helping us think more carefully. If you could possess all the things of the earth that your mind and heart are upon, there is still not enough good in them as to undo the evil of the smallest sin, not the smallest sin of thought. Your heart is muddling upon the earth, and you think that you would be blessed if you had thus and thus and thus as others have. Let me tell you, if you had but one sinful thought, there is more evil in that than there is good in all that you shall get all the days of your life. And if this is so, it concerns you rather to have your mind on how to avoid sin, how to get the evil of sin removed, and how to get your sin mortified. That ought to concern you more than minding and plotting about the things of the earth. So which should be more pressing? How do I get more things? Or how do I deal with sin? How you deal with sin should be a more pressing concern, because no matter how much you have, you can never have enough things to overcome or deal with the sin that's in your life. And all the things you have don't compare to the evil of the smallest sin. That's something to think about, right? When I have problems financially, I can't stop thinking about it. Well, a financial problem really is nothing compared to a sin problem, right? And so it would make sense if my mind was more concerned about how do I change, how do I become like Christ, than it is about how do I pay the dentist bill. A second consideration that may take off the hearts of men from the things of the earth is this. So number two, the chief things that are in the earth have been the portion of unbelievers heretofore and are to this day, and shall be the portion of multitudes whom God hates and has set apart to glorify his infinite justice eternally. Shall your mind and heart be set upon such things as are the portion of unbelievers? Will an unbeliever's portion satisfy you? Will it serve you? Are you satisfied with dog meat? If it will not content you, why is it that your mind is so much upon the things of the earth? So unbelievers are living for something, and they often get it. But do you really want to live like an unbeliever? Do you really want to live for something that small? There's a sermon by Jonathan Edwards entitled, Sometimes God Gives Prosperity to Those He Hates. And Edwards is just saying, you certainly shouldn't look at financial prosperity as this super huge blessing, like the biggest blessing that you can have, because even unbelievers are able to experience that. And so God is kind and merciful to unbelievers. So I can't say that it's not common grace, but certainly it's not of the same value as holiness or communion with God. He gives an illustration here. He says, it may be that you are poor and low in the world. Your mind is upon some little matter. You never expect to have any great things in the world, and yet you mind these little matters as if that were your portion and your happiness, some small pittance to furnish your house, to provide for yourself and your family, which is probably most of us. He says it in a cute way, but we are not thinking, hey, you know, I want to be Bill Gates or something. But we're thinking, oh, I would like to just have a nice home, or I would like to drive a nice car or whatever. And so that's where we get focused. But he says, now think about this. Oh, friend, if it were possible for you to get the empire of the whole world under your foot, still you would get no more than has been the portion of such as God has hated. And if kingdoms and empires have been the portions of unbelievers, why do you abundantly mind things that are lower and let the strength of your heart flow out upon such things as these are? A third consideration is this. You're made for something more. You're made for something bigger. Surely God has made man for higher things than the things of this earth. Oh, if you had your thoughts working this way, for what end do I think God has made the children of men? Why has he sent them into the world? Of all the creatures God has here upon the earth, none are capable of knowing him, the infinite first being of all things, except the children of men. This is why we always say, what a privilege to be a human. Really, really. Privileged above animals, for sure, in the way that we can commune with God. And in a sense, privileged above angels because of what God has done for us and the relationship that we're able to have with him because of Christ. God the Son did not assume angelic nature. He assumed human nature. God has given us a nature that is capable of having a relationship with him. Surely then, there are other things that God made man for than to have meat, drink, and clothes and to live here a while just to enjoy creatures. Do we not read often that Jesus Christ was God and man, took man's nature upon himself and died for man? Surely there must be some other manner of things that are the fruit of the purchase of the blood of Christ and the things of the earth. God became man to die for our good. It had to be more than just so that we could go on a nice vacation. Oh, my brothers, if you had only this settled upon you, that God has great, glorious, and wonderful thoughts about mankind, this would be a mighty means to take your hearts off the things of this earth when you have your hearts groveling here. Oh, but are these the things God made man for? Had not God higher thoughts in making the children of men? Do I not find in the word that when man was made, there was a kind of divine consultation with the Trinity? Come, let us make man according to our image. God had higher thoughts of man than of other things. And if man were made for nothing else but to dig in the earth, certainly the thoughts of God about man have been very low and small, as I may so speak with holy reverence. For these are but low and small things here that men enjoy on the earth. Well, certainly, we shouldn't minimize just the beauty of creation and the glory of what God has for us here, because we're going to be resurrected and we're going to live in a physical universe eternally. So there is something beautiful about enjoying what God has made to the glory of God. But I think what he's saying is there is something very ugly about taking what God has made for us to enjoy and acting as if it were God. We were made for something much bigger than bowing down to money and being a slave to money. Fourthly, as God has higher thoughts concerning man, so the dignity of man's nature, the rational soul of man, is of too high a birth to have the strength of it spent upon the things of the earth. God breathed into man a soul, and that soul is a kind of divine spark. The soul of man is of the same nature as angels, a spirit as angels have. So we have a physical body, but we also have a immaterial soul, and obviously angels are immaterial. So there's something immaterial about us, the soul, and that soul is precious. And the thoughts of the mind, the faculties and powers of the soul are more precious than to be poured out as water upon the ground. Like this is when you, sometimes when you see someone who is on drugs or, you know, just gone, and your heart just breaks. It breaks as you see them because you're thinking, you are a human. You're made for something so much bigger. And yet living for earthly things is not that much different, right? The angels must look at us as we spend our energies on things like that and think, no, this is heartbreaking. You were made for something so much bigger. If a man had a golden tool, he would not use it just to grind dirt, straw, and sticks. The mind of man, the faculty is too high to be exercised in the things of this earth. The mind of man is of a most excellent nature. It's fit to converse not only with angels, but with the eternal God himself, with Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, and to bestow the strength of such a faculty upon such dirty, drossy, low, base, mean things as earthly-minded men and women do. This is a great evil. Know this. The dignity of your nature, the excellency of your mind, and the soul of man is that of a transcendent being. Put all the world into the balance with it. It's nothing. Therefore, you know what Christ said. What shall it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul? The soul of the lowest galley slave is more precious than heaven and earth, sun, moon, stars, and all the hosts of them. And let me add, than all the silver and golden mines underground, and all the unsearchable riches of the great and wide sea. Yea, put all together, and the soul of the most contemptible beggar that cries for a crust of bread at your door is unexpressedly worth more than all of these. Now, if a man's soul is of such a high-born nature, if God has put such a spirit, which is a spark of heaven, into the bosom of man for him to employ in no other use and service but to merely be an earthworm to creep upon the ground, this is a great evil. God has given us a soul. It's fun to talk about fighting earthly-mindedness because really what we're talking about is living all out as a human, taking advantage of the fact that we've been given a soul and made for something so big. The fifth consideration, and we'll stop with this one. The fifth consideration is the uncertainty of all these things, uncertain riches. Any casualty come and take away from you all the things of the earth that your mind is on. Okay, that sentence is a funny one, but I think any trouble can come into your life and easily take away anything that you might be wanting. God sends a little too much heat into the body and puts you into a fever, and where's your delight then? That's right. You get this thing, you work so long, you get sick, you can't even enjoy it. Your body will either be too hot or too cold, and what's become of all your comfort in this life? You go abroad and are wounded by an enemy, and what refreshment do you receive from all these things? Let me tell you, you are in the midst of 1,000 potential tragedies here, every moment ready to take away all the comforts of the earth. Usually at the time when most minds of men and women are fixed upon the earth, that's the time God has to strike them in those things. That's when they're closest to being deprived of the comforts of the earth, when their minds are most fixed upon them. And that's a kindness of God. As you know, when the rich man in the gospel was blessing himself and crying to his soul, "Soul, take thine ease, thou hast goods laid up for many years," that very night, the text says, this message came to him. "You fool, this night shall your soul be taken away from you. And then who shall all these things be?" And at the time that Nebuchadnezzar was blessing himself in the palace he had built for his honor, a message came to him from heaven so that he was ousted from all his court vanities to graze among the beasts of the field. And you probably know this. You might have found the same thing to be true in your experience. That God has crossed you in the things of the earth when your mind and heart was most glued to them. And it may be that he's done it in mercy. If you're a believer, he has done it in mercy. It's a greater, listen to this, bold print this in your mind. It is a greater mercy to be crossed in these things at such a time than to prosper in the midst of them. For it may be a good argument that God intends good to a soul to cross him at the time he's most earthly. Oh, many that have been godly indeed, but have been earthly minded and have found God coming at such a time and crossing them in some earthly contentment, have seen cause to bless God for thus dealing with them. Where was I going? I was going altogether to the earth and minding such things. My heart was set upon them, and God came to me in a seasonable time to show me the vanity of my heart and of those things that my mind was busied upon. Oh, it was a happy cross that I had at such a season. There was much of Christ that hung upon it. It's funny, sometimes you are wanting something so badly, you can't understand why God hasn't given it to you, but it may be, I know this has been true in my life, for sure, I'm sure of it. It may be that his not giving it to you is a mercy, if you'll just see it. Like if you could just see it a little differently. His not giving it to you is for a good purpose. It's better that you don't have that. It's better. That's his kindness. And yet, so often we don't take advantage of God's mercy because we're so earthly minded and focused on having what wouldn't be good for us. Like children almost sometimes. We want to be heavenly minded for a lot of different reasons. If we're going to be heavenly minded, we have to stop being earthly minded. And yet we're being discipled, mentored in being earthly minded. And so often our hearts just slip back into that way of thinking. It doesn't take much. It doesn't take much to set our minds running the wrong direction. And so we need to reason with ourselves. We need to kill this sin of earthly mindedness. And to do that, we need to be wise. We need the Holy Spirit to help us think straight. And Burroughs here gives us five thoughts that we can think when we're struggling with earthly mindedness. The first is that what I should really be concerned about is sin. The second is that unbelievers get all this stuff and are living for this stuff, and God knows what I need. A third is that God has made me for something bigger than the things of this earth, and he's given me a soul. And so I should be concerned about my soul. This is a valuable treasure. I don't want to waste the privilege of being a human. And the fifth is this thing that I'm putting such hope in that I just think I can't be happy without it is so uncertain. So I better learn to be content without it, because even if I do get it, it may not bring me the joy that I think it would. Well, let's pray that God helps us keep fighting for our lives, for our spiritual lives, and pursuing heavenly mindedness.